Hey folks, if you're in Austin and you're looking for some live music in the live music capital of the world, why not check out 2013-2014 Austin Chronicle Music Poll winner for Best All Ages Venue, Best Sounding Venue, and Best Venue. That's Strange Brew Loungeside. Simply go to strangebrewloungeside.com, look on their calendar, and find out what's going on. From Joey Lee to Christopher Cross, Steve Poltz to Renfro, they're all playing there. Go to Strange Brew Loungeside for yourself and see what Austin's Best Venue has to offer. That's strangebrewloungeside.com. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a fantastic show for you guys today. My guest is Aaron Behrens. You might know him as the lead singer of Ghostland Observatory. They're still out there. I know that they're doing the Euphoria Fest this year in April. You can check that out. But Aaron Behrens and the Midnight Stroll, that's a new project that he's got going on. He put out a record just last year, and he's been on tour all over the States for it. He's going to be doing some more touring this year, and he's writing some new songs for a new record. So, yeah, man, we have a great conversation. I'd never met him before. He's extremely, extremely interesting and really fun to talk to. So if you don't know Aaron Behrens, you will enjoy getting to know him, as I did in this conversation. Fantastic guy, amazingly talented dude, and phenomenal singer. All right, Aaron Behrens, coming up very soon. Right now, let me tell you what's going on with me. Played a couple gigs at Skyrocket this weekend, played at Hanover's in Pflugerville, a place that we play pretty often, and a place that we hadn't played in a while. On Saturday, we went down to the Continental Club in Houston. Fantastic show, sold out, crazy times, it was a very packed show. It was very crazy. It was a lot of fun. Our friend Chris came in and subbed for my friend Kyle during the show, so it was nice to see him. Hadn't seen him in a while, or his wife, Sarah. You guys know Sarah. She was last on with Lauren Bruno with the $3 shows. Anyway, we had some great shows. Came back on Sunday and went to go see this writer and show creator and showrunner and executive producer guy named Stephen Falk, who was an executive producer for Weeds and also Orange is the New Black. And he kind of spoke about his career for this Austin Film Festival event, and I went to it, saw him speak, came back, watched the Super Bowl, very exciting Super Bowl. That was pretty exciting down to the last wire, and the balls were totally inflated. And by the balls being inflated, I mean mine. I checked them the whole show and the whole game, and it turns out they were inflated. Still writing songs. I fell behind two songs in my writing a song every day thing until February 25th, so I'll be writing songs until February 27th, it looks like. So, got to get down and start writing a song today and doing that. All right. I got no gigs this weekend. I got the weekend off, so I'm looking for stuff to do. Looking through the paper, calling friends. Hey, what are you doing this weekend? I've got the weekend off. Let's do something. Something wild. It's fun to have a weekend off. This time of year, Skyrocket, it starts to get busy again, so it's nice to see like, oh, we got a weekend off. What are we going to do this weekend? Something fun. Maybe see some music. Maybe see some comedy. Maybe have a good time. I'm obviously going to be writing a song each of the weekend days because I don't have a gig, so be doing that. All right, so hey, look, I'm doing good, you're doing good, hopefully you're out there running or exercising or driving somewhere or walking or working at your computer or pretending to work at work. If you're pretending to work at work, thank you. I like a little mischief out there and know that my show is involved in mischief, so it makes me happy. Thank you so much for listening to the show. We're going to have a great conversation with the lead singer of Aaron Behrens and the Midnight Stroll and also Ghostland Observatory, the great Aaron Behrens. Fantastic dude. Also, you know, he brought me a gift. He brought me this this energy powder called Rockin' Wellness with all this great stuff in it, and it is fantastic. What a nice gift. And right when I'm in the middle of having all these smoothies all the time. So I'm almost done with it. I've got to order some online and get it here pretty soon before I run out of energy. All right? Hey, let's talk to Aaron Behrens from Aaron Behrens and the Midnight Stroll and Ghostland Observatory. Great conversation. Let's get down.
Hey. You're just a dreamer, you're just a dreamer. You're just a dreamer, you're just a dreamer.
With another band, and the guy from our band said, yeah, the Smithereens. And I was like, I'm never leaving home without my shit again.
Yeah.
You know?
Because you could always just be...
Yeah, I went outside and talked to the dude for like an hour, and the whole time I was like, oh, God.
Why am I not doing
yeah. this? Yeah. It's weird. So what did you want to do a podcast?
I've always like, thought about doing it, you know? I thought it's cool. I mean, I was just interested how you got into it and how you just, like, decided to do it, you know, finally. You were just like...
I've always been into, like, when I was a kid, I used to listen to interviews on AM radio and stuff, and I loved the format of talk. I love morning radio.
Yeah.
And then I became a huge Fresh Air fan.
Cool, yeah.
And then a cousin of mine told me, like, you know, you can listen to it at any time. And I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, they have these things called podcasts. And then he was like, and it's not just that. There are people that make like original content for it. And yeah. most of them are comedians, which I love.
I love Joe Rogan. Like that's
yeah.
Joe
yeah.
Rogan and then Radiolab.
Yeah, Radiolab's awesome.
That's fucked up production yeah. on that shit's crazy.
Yeah. Well, my cousin turned me on to WTF, the Mark
Maron. Oh, yeah,
Maron
yeah, the Mark Maron.
And
yeah.
I was like,
yeah,
I was Martin, like, man, great. I get this dude.
Yeah.
And it seemed to make it, you know, man, as I've gotten older, you got to deal with sort of a fading importance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah.
You know, other people took your place of importance in other people's lives where
yeah.
you were once, you know what I mean? And that's
yeah.
a tough thing to deal with. And a lot of times you can get jaded and get negative, and I didn't want to do
no.
that. And doing this
you don't want to go in the
and
hole.
Hanging one-on-one with people that are either doing way more than me or way less than me or just the exact same. You know what I mean? Like you realize everyone's in the same boat and
yeah.
stuff is just, oh, it's like it's, the sea. It's just kind of moving and you're up
yeah,
and you're down.
There's no better or worse.
Yeah.
It's just you are.
Yeah.
And that's when I listened to a couple of your podcasts and I was like, man, you're really good at this.
Thanks, man.
Like I was
Thank
like,
you.
This is like. I was like, you really seem to have a knack for this kind of thing.
I think I'm just
know?
Genuinely interested. I think
that's the key.
I had no journalistic experience,
yeah.
but I'm genuinely interested. And I'm not scared to talk to people.
Well, and I think that's what's needed, because that's what I realized. Like when I'm listening to a lot of Joe Rogan or Mark Maron, it's like they're really interested in what's going on.
Yeah.
It's not somebody that's like, oh, I just feel like doing it. It's like they're really curious.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's cool to also be talking to somebody that's a peer. As
mm-hmm.
opposed to like an interview, like you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, you've done mountains of interviews.
Yeah,
fast ones.
And
yeah. I'm flattered that you would think that this is a good one to do.
Oh, no, I think it's great, man.
Yeah,
I think it's super cool.
Yeah, you know what else I like about this is that you have like publicists and all this shit. But like, I like that my thing. I just reach out to people and they come over.
Well, I think that's
I do stuff with publicists. They reach out to me.
Yeah,
but a lot of times, like I circumvent that. And
I think, dude, the more and more I'm like. Going in and out of it, I think I'm just realizing that the middleman bullshit is just bullshit. Now
we don't really
need
it
in this day
and
age.
And there's
you don't.
Like the rock star thing where someone handles all your shit. That's over.
Well, it's boring too.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you feel
what, you
so
just
fucking
sit in your little. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. Exactly.
It's not. It's like I don't like that.
Yeah.
You know, like it's to me. It's like I'd rather be directly connected to my fans.
Yeah.
And that I mean that's the way a mom and pop shop works, right?
Yeah.
That's the way.
Is that how you guys handled the whole Ghostland Observatory thing?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we never toured in a tour bus. We never had management. We only had a booking agent, you know?
Well, yeah,
we
you need that.
You need a booking.
That's
what
gonna
you do
take
need.
All day.
That's
yeah.
what you do need.
You won't write songs if you're trying to
no,
book
dude.
Tours all the time.
No.
Yeah.
You need a booking agent, but that's really all you need.
Yeah.
Until it maybe becomes so crazy, like, but... But
Taylor
I mean,
Swift
we were,
needs a publicist.
Exactly. But fuck, I don't want to be on a Subway cup. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to be have my own Subway cup, you know?
Yeah.
Like, damn it. You
yeah.
know, it's like,
yeah, 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 yeah.
I mean, to me, after that, it's not about the music anymore, right?
No.
It's not about your original art form at that point.
No.
You're just part of some
Selling
machine.
Out. Yeah.
There's a reason why I heard the company's called Big Machine.
Yeah. Did you guys ever have like a song in a commercial or anything?
Yeah, I mean we've done. You
what
know,
did you? What
we
you
had
guys?
Dr. Pepper commercial and Lexus commercials and stuff like that. But
I remember the
but
Dr.
they,
Pepper.
But they contacted us directly.
Yeah,
you know,
and they used one of your songs that you already had.
Yeah,
and they
exactly they just they wanted one of they had a direct tune that they wanted.
What does that do? Like, do you notice a spike in everything when you get a song?
No, I mean, it's a good pay. Because, you know, it's good money coming in the door. But, I mean, you don't necessarily notice any new fans from it. Maybe, I mean, maybe there is something, but I don't know, man. To me, my whole thing has been, it's live element.
Yeah.
Like if you go out there and like really are destroying it every night, like people pay attention.
Yeah.
It's harder work, but what else we can do?
You know, what's so weird is talking to you, because like live, and you have such a gigantic personality, and I've never seen your new band.
Yeah.
The Midnight Stroll, but I have seen Ghostland.
And yeah.
It seems like I'm talking to a different dude.
Well, you are, because I mean, to me, it's like, to me, once it gets ready for the stage, it's fight time.
Yeah.
You know, it's time to go kick ass and take names. Yeah. I mean, the knives come out at that point, you know?
Yeah.
That's the way I've always been. I've been like that way since I was a kid.
Where are you from?
San Saba.
San Saba. Where is that?
It's like an hour and a half away from here. It's tiny Texas.
Is that where
town.
You live now?
No, I live in Leander, but
okay.
I was born and raised in a small town, 2,500 people, you know? Small little place.
That's not what you would expect the Ghostland Observatory singer to be. Like, you're almost from outer space when you're seeing that.
Well, I mean,
guy.
You think about it out there, you know.
You are in outer space.
You are in outer space, you know. I mean, everybody's a character.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because, like, I remember, like I remember growing up, and you're just around characters. You're around people that have mental health issues. But you don't realize it as a kid. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're like, whoa, that dude sits.
It's like that movie Bernie.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's like a small town in Texas. Totally. Where just they're larger-than-life characters.
They are, and they have to be. And then there's people that are just batshit crazy.
Yeah.
But that's what makes it neat about living there, you know? Yeah. And like, I didn't realize that till I left, and I started just thinking of all these people I grew up around, and like, I was like, everybody was a character in my life. Like, everybody was this thing. And I guess that kind of ran over on me, and it's like, oh, I become a character. Like, you know, like, you become this presence, you become this thing. But I've always admired people that don't know their characters.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's why I'm
totally unaware of it.
I'm like, that fucking dude is crazy, and he doesn't even know it. Like, he thinks he is just, that's the way it is.
I love people like that.
I admire people that way.
Yeah.
You know, but they don't know no better.
Yeah.
And, but for me, you know, maybe I am that way. Maybe I don't know I am that way. But for me, you know, I've always admired people that are truly just themselves. I mean, there's no switch. It's just that 24/7.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's fucking amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing.
But those people are my inspirations.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's what has always been my inspiration, is these crazy characters are kind of forgotten, are people that aren't in the limelight. They're just in their own freaking world, you know? And that's, but yeah, I think I just took a lot from that, you know?
You know, there's a good, remember that guy, Leslie?
Yeah, oh, of course, dude. I worked on Six in Congress for
okay,
6 years.
Okay, so you dealt with him a lot.
I saw Leslie every single day. Yeah.
There was something that happened once he became self-aware. You know, like in the late 90s and early 2000s.
Exactly, he became...
It was cool, but then all of a sudden he had his own magnet set.
Yeah.
He's running for mayor.
Well, and that's, you know...
And it stopped being cute. It started being kind
of
creepy.
It did. Because, but it's almost like that's what happened to a lot of, like, Austin crazy people. We started... making them these, we started
bumper stickers and t-shirts.
Exactly, and, we made them our freak flag to call people in.
That's true,
you know. But they just kind of got caught up in the friggin' rigmarole, you know.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I didn't think about that, but yeah, that is funny.
So you lived here in the apartment?
Yeah,
that's insane.
Yeah, this was the first, like. Because I remember our parents didn't come. Like, I moved here with a buddy of mine that lived in a smaller town that I was from. And a girl that was from the same hometown as me, and we just moved here fresh out of high school. And I remember our parents didn't come with us to look for any apartment, or they just like go to Austin and go find somewhere to live.
Yeah.
So it's like,
go to Austin
didn't even
and find
freaking,
somewhere
exactly,
to live.
And I was just like, what? We didn't know. Like, we didn't know. And I was like,
how did you do that? Because I don't know how to do that. I have a friend that has a real estate company, and they find places for people. So,
I didn't know what a real estate agent was. You know, it's like you're coming from like a small.
How small is San Saba?
It's tiny, dude. I mean, it's like it's 2,500 people, and we just, you know, probably before I left, got our, you know, second blinking light. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
I mean, so is you know you didn't know that.
How what did your parents? What was your how'd you grow up?
Well, I mean, my mom worked at a Harry's department store, which is a Western wear store. It's still in San Diego. So like cool. From I
it's
mean,
so cool
because
I bet there's a guy named Harry.
Yeah, there
and
was.
That's
Harry Shapiro.
That was his story.
Harry
yeah,
Shapiro.
Kid runs it now or something.
Yeah, well, Harry Shapiro was the original guy there, and you know, and he had this whole Western wear store back in the day. You know, it's been there forever.
Yeah.
And yeah, they recently some people came in and bought it and redid it all, and it's super awesome place. But yeah, I grew up in there. I grew up running around that whole store, and you know, just being around all that kind of element. And then my dad, you know, he was doing you know everything, you know, carpenter, electrician,
because it's a small town.
Salesman.
What are you gonna do unless you have? I mean,
you don't.
Yeah,
you don't. There's nothing, you know. So it's just this weird element of. It's this
you,
weird
you
element.
You had to get out of there.
Oh yeah.
Like
no, I was like a different creature there. You know, I was just like.
Well, you were one of the characters.
Yeah, I was one of the characters. I wanted to be one of the characters.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to be one of those crazy people. You know, like that was what I wanted to do.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
I did. I had an older sister.
Yeah.
Yeah. So and.
But she's still alive.
Yeah, she okay. is. Yeah.
Did she turn you on to music? Because I'm trying to figure out how, I understand your more rock side, but like the dance side and stuff, like I'm just
that's
like,
a trip
what the,
too.
How the
so
hell
that's a
did
trip.
You get that
okay.
in San Saba?
Okay, that's yeah, that is a trip, man. Because the thing is like, you know, I did have an older sister, so they would have dances. Like they had a dance in Lano, I remember. And
I'm just thinking of like a rave with that consists
but it's
of like
not
eight
a rave.
People.
And, yeah, it's not a rave. I didn't know what the fuck raves were.
Right, right,
you know,
right.
they didn't exist. Like
when
it
was this? Like the
this
90s?
Was, I mean, 90s. Okay. So you know, like I remember, like at Regent's Park in San Saba, they would have dances, and like there would be this a DJ from Brownwood called Dr. Tunes,
right,
would come and be you know playing tracks and. I remember I was really into like, I was just into, I would get up there and I was very coordinated for a young kid. Like I was eight, nine.
Right.
And my sister would be going to these dances, you know, and I remember like Personal Jesus would be playing, you know, and I thought that was the first song that really hit me. And I was like, whoa, this is this like devil worshiping music?
Yeah, there's something.
Like there was
something
dark
weird,
and weird that I've never heard. And I was like, and I got out there and danced to that. And I would dance to tons of hip hop. Like I loved hip hop. And, I just naturally I just was naturally drawn, you know, MC Hammer was big, so I was always trying to do the hammer, you know, and
no, you can dance,
James
man.
Brown. Thank you,
that
man.
Sounds
no,
weird.
No, no,
well, you can.
Well,
you're
no,
a great
I can.
Dancer.
I mean, I can, and I appreciate that, man, because I mean, but I just naturally had a draw to that, you know, and I remember I mean, I can remember being little and just going to these like weird little dances that these, you know, teenagers were having. And, dude, I would sit out there and dance the whole night, and I would come out of there, my throat would be so hoarse because I'd be dancing in front of those cheap fog machines.
Yeah.
And with the coconut
yeah,
smell.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I hate that smell.
And I would be, like, there all
I
night.
I just played
just
a gig the other
there.
Night where they used that for a thing
oh,
at the beginning
it kills
of it.
Your throat.
Yeah, it's awful.
But I would just get out there and dance my ass off all night because I wanted, I was like, man, I could dance better than all these people. Like, I'm out there as a kid dancing against them. So it was super cool, you know.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So what you heard your own Personal Jesus. Did the riff speak to you at all? Because did you want a guitar after that or something?
No. It was about, it was
dancing,
it was
being in the
dancing
scene.
In the yeah. lyrics, you know, it was the vibe,
yeah.
it was the mood, you know, and, but then I got into, there's this thing called Performance Incorporated, right? And it was this lady named Kaylin Scott. She was a teacher. And she always would do these big productions at the school cafeteria, like it would be 50s. You know, and everybody being poodle skirts.
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
We'd be doing like 50s reviews, you know. And
yeah,
this is all after school stuff. It'd be, you'd sign up for it. So she was the drama teacher, and then she would do these performances. And my sister was in it. I remember she was clogging at the time. And I'd seen Jerry Lee Lewis, Great Balls of Fire.
Yeah.
The movie,
yeah.
you know. And all that stuff had a big influence on me. La Bamba. You know, Lou Diamond Phillips's, all that stuff, you know, Heartbreak Hotel.
Yeah.
All those movies had a big influence because we didn't have rock radio or anything. It was all country music there. You know, we didn't have MTV either. We didn't have music television either.
You didn't have cable in sense?
We had cable, but we
didn't
have
MTV.
We didn't have any music like that, you know? So.
Wow.
I got all that kind of stuff from like, you know, people listening to stuff or like magazines every now and then. But movies were mainly the big influence for me. It was like I said, the,
right? Because it's all pre-internet too.
Exactly. So it was like Jerry Lee Lewis and all that. But I remember I did Great Balls of Fire on my sister's bed. I was like acting like I was playing it and lip singing it. You know, my parents were like, "Oh, you're good. You would like the performance with your sister." So before you know it, I'm doing Great Balls of Fire, and my sister and all her friends are clogging behind me, you know, while I'm lip-syncing Great Balls of Fire on stage at the cafeteria, you know.
That is awesome.
So that's where
Did your sister have great pride because you followed her into it and then ended up this guy?
Yeah. No, my sister's very proud of me. I know she is. She always says how proud of me she is, and
That's
sweet. But that was a huge, because if she wasn't doing that kind of thing, I mean, who knows, you know? But, and her and I would do a lot of recordings at the house. Like, you know, we had a karaoke machine, so we'd record stuff. But I always just, and we'd do like little radio shows and stuff on the tape deck.
Well, see, you were practicing for your podcast.
Oh, yeah. and so it's just kind of, you know, I think just all that stuff. And I was really into that kind of thing. And then just performing and seeing her perform. And man, after doing that kind of thing, man, we just really started. I did Garth Brooks, Shameless. But I was lip syncing the whole time.
Okay, you weren't. But you were performing.
I was never singing. I was performing, though. And that's, I think that's where a lot of the performance side came.
It's weird because your voice is like astronomical. Like it's a.
You
have such a great, amazing voice that actually, like when I listened to you, I was thinking today, like, fuck, I wonder, is it remotely delicate?
I mean, it can't.
Because I can, I mean, you know, you go to places that are somewhat unnatural.
Well, you know, but the thing is I think the reason why that, because I was always self-taught singing. Like in high school, I got into heavy metal and I was screaming a lot.
That's funny because I was going to say you can sing almost to, your voice does not nearly have the timbre of like a Vince Neil where it's like,
yeah.
It's very beautiful and clear and round sounding, even in the highest registers. Yeah.
Well, and I think the real thing that started really dialing me in is when Ghostland started, because we were practicing in such a small room and the electronics were so loud, the only way that I could hear myself was to sing at a very high decibel.
Yeah.
Because it was the only thing that could cut through the bass.
Yeah.
So honestly, I think it started developing because of a way just to be able to hear myself.
Yeah.
Because we weren't using monitors, really. I remember I had a California Blonde I was singing out of.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just cranked up behind me, you know? So I think that's how it started really developing that high register.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that's kind of why I went into Midnight Stroll, too, because it was exploring the whole different worlds of my voice as well.
Sure.
You know, singing different tunes as well. So
that we also, I mean, you have a real gift for melody and stuff like that. Like,
Thank you.
Really, like, I mean, there are some astounding melodies in that on the Midnight Stroll album. It's so great. Like, were you listening to, well, how did you get, like, did you play music in San Saba outside of those, the performance classes?
I started my own band, you know, in high school.
What was that?
It's called Dismount.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't ask me
a bunch
why.
Of gymnasts.
Yeah, a bunch of just athletic gymnasts everywhere. But
it, Dismount. That Dismount. That's an interesting name.
Yeah, I think it
Why?
Came from.
Do you know?
I think honestly, I think they used it on a rodeo one time on TV, like dismounting off the horse.
What was Dismount's?
It was more
style.
Like it was pretty bad. It was a rip off of Rage Against the Machine and Limp Bizkit at the time because it was like a combo of that, you know. I was really into that. I love Rage Against the Machine. I have no problem claiming that one because that was actually when I saw Rage Against the Machine the first time in 1997, South Park Meadows with the Roots.
I saw that with the Roots.
With the Roots.
I was at that show.
Yeah, baby. Yeah. There's another connection, right? So when I first saw Zach step on stage, I was like, that's how you step on stage.
Oh yeah,
you go out there and you just there's this, you just go out there and cut throats. That's how you do it.
Yeah,
you know, and that's the when I saw that, I was like, that's how you step on stage, and that was a huge influence for me. But when I was in high school, that's what I took after. I was just like, I'm going up there aggressive and just.
Were you playing any instruments?
No, I played guitar, but I didn't play guitar in the bands.
Okay,
just because I couldn't really play guitar that great.
Right,
you know, there's kids that were better than me. And I would make them come to practice. They're like, my dad's complaining.
You were like the ringleader.
No, I was always pushing them. I was like, y'all have got to come to practice. Like, well, we've got homework. Screw homework. Where's that going to get you in life?
That's the same way I was. That's like an archetype of a person. Like a person that runs a band is like this guy that tells people to quit all the stuff that, like, I made a guy quit college. And he was doing great. It's cool. And the bummer was he had to go back to school when he was like fucking 35 because of me. Or not probably because of me, but I did push him.
That's not your fault.
But I was like, what are you doing in North Texas? What are you going to be, a jazz guy? Fuck that. Come on, our band's going. Let's do it.
Yeah, come on. Now or never.
Yeah.
Now or never.
How is that? Because you didn't know. You just knew instinctively that if you want to do this, you got to sacrifice a lot of stuff.
Well, I think it was the thing I found that I wanted to do more than anything else in my life.
Yeah.
Like, I think I found early on, because I was a very emotional kid.
Did you feel
kid.
Like not only, okay, well, okay.
Yeah. I was a very emotional kid.
In what way? Like, you would cry easily or?
I just angered easy.
Oh.
Very aggressive easily, you know, very angered easily. Like, I had a short fuse. But I was always also a really dynamic, happy kid, too. But then that mode would switch really quickly. So, but I was, you know, I think in high school it really hit. I think just realizing early on, there's a whole other side of me, too, the spectrum of growing up in between. Because growing up in Zanzibar, I had a church on one side and a school on the other, exactly on each side of my house. So I was like right in between. And I think early on I realized... I would go into the church when nobody was there, and I realized the very spirit, there was just this energy there that I kind of picked up on, you know, something more.
What kind of church?
It was an Episcopal church,
okay. But
there was just an old wooden church, mm-hmm. you know, and there's just, I always call it like mind resin left in there,
yeah.
you know, all the prayers, all the sorrows, all the spirit, soul that was people weeping, people praising, everything inside of there. And I picked up on that when I was very little, you know, and I think realizing death early on, I think realizing the ebb and flow of life very early on really kind of crushed me as a kid, you know, so then I think...
You knew it was finite.
I knew it was finite.
I knew that my parents
could go at any time. I knew that people could be taken out of my life at any age. You know, I found myself really angry about that.
Yeah, it's probably all this anxiety
manifested
itself in this weird anger.
Yeah, exactly. So then, you know, I started writing a lot of poetry.
Yeah.
You know, because that became my outlet. And then as soon as I got to get to, I remember actually the preacher, Mr. G, gave me an old Stella guitar that he had laying around. And dude only had 3 strings on it. But those 3 strings I would play the hell out of.
Yeah.
You know, and that became my whole outlet all of a sudden. Yeah. I was like, This is the way I cope. You know, this is the way I get through it.
It's how so many of us ended up like this. Exactly that.
Yeah, it is. I think it's something we realize early on that nobody sees. Everybody else is caught into this. It's not naiveness. It's nothing. It's just they choose not to question.
Yeah.
And we step onto the other side. And once we step on the other side, we can't turn back.
No.
You know, that's the crazy thing.
No, and a lot of it isn't like the fame or the promise of fame or the promise of a lot of money. Most of it is we do this and it clears our fucking heart out.
Yes.
You know what
exactly.
I mean? If not, we would all be casualties of life.
Oh, dude, I would, yeah.
So many
no,
of us.
No, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, we would, I mean,
right back to look, what would have happened to John Lennon without rock and roll? Like, you know, I mean, he would have been a
destroyed thug. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that is the thing. And I think there's such an interesting thing to look deeper into that. And this is, dude, and honestly, like in high school, I was straight edge. I mean, this is pre-drugs. This is pre-alcohol. Nothing. I didn't do anything. You know, this is all just seeing it purely
you were raw
sober.
As it was.
Yeah.
I mean, you had like, you were
I needed
going
it.
Places that other people weren't.
Exactly.
And you chose not to numb yourself, which is great.
I didn't even choose. I just didn't.
You just didn't know.
Didn't know. I was just purely innocent. You know, it was just straight, just in this, just seeing something, you know?
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, so I just wrote and wrote and wrote. Like, I have all those papers still, and I just see them. I'm like, go back to that place. I'm like, ugh, let's just put this back in the box and put them away, you know? But that's what started it for me, man. And I knew I just... This is just what I have to do. I don't do anything. I can't do anything else.
Yeah.
I don't want to.
Yeah.
This is, I love it. I need it.
Yeah.
And yeah, and it wasn't ever a thing about fame or fortune. I mean, I think maybe at some point it was. I mean, yeah, like that fame. You like being recognized. I mean, this is the thing I can do better than anybody else with my peers at that time.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, did you ever think that in the 90s when you were doing Dismount,
that
you would be doing like a face-off rap with Snoop Dogg and Bootsy Collins?
Bootsy Collins was on bass? And Bernie Worrell was playing keys, yeah.
Jesus, man.
No, I did not.
Did you get to hang out with him?
I did. I've hung out with Snoop a couple of times.
I hung out with him once.
Yeah, he's just chill.
I cried in front of him.
Did you? The weed was that good.
No. No, he had a guy. Then it was in like 1999 or something. He had a guy named Marsberg that did his blunt rolling.
Yeah.
But he was working with DJ Quick, and I was in the same studio, and we had to fire everyone we worked with and throw our record away. And so when I fired everyone, I cried.
Yeah.
And then I walked outside, and Snoop was standing out by the ping pong table with.
He's like, what's up, little man?
What happened, man? Yesterday, y'all were all happy. Yeah.
Man, that is crazy.
Yeah. So did you ever think that you would be in that position? Like, what was going through your mind when you were doing that?
Oh, doing Dismount?
No, when you were doing that song with Snoop.
I was just going out there to freaking give him the fight of his life, dude. Like, I was wanting to go out there and...
You really did. I mean, you kicked ass.
But yeah, that's my thing is like, I wanted to come out there swinging as hard as I could to make him swing as hard as he could.
Yeah.
Like, that's every night. Like, if anybody's...
That's what your performances are like. That's what I liked about Ghostland Observatory's performances. I love the records, too, but there's just something about your fucking...
It's the liveness, man. It is. And that's the same thing with the Stroll. I mean, the records are great, but it's like my stage presence is the same thing. And, like, that's the way I always approach. Like, even at festivals, I mean, I don't know. I have some friends that are in... I have a lot of friends that are in bands that are, like... It's always been interesting, you know, because every musician does it for a different reason, right? And, like, a lot of people are like, oh, it's not about this or not about that. But for me, I'm a very competitive person.
Oh, okay.
And to me, if I'm playing, like, a festival or something, and I'm going on before, like, a headliner or something, they better bring their A game.
Yeah.
Because I'm going out there to kill it. Every time I step on stage, I'm going to kill it.
It's like that James Brown ethic.
It's totally. Like, I love that's it. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, it's... Period.
Somebody's like, gonna have to help you off.
Exactly.
Because you're not gonna.
Oh, there's been millions. Dude, there's been tons of nights where I was on stage with Ghostland. I was like, I was almost passing out. You know, because it's like 2 hours of dancing and singing. But I would be like, I'd rather pass out on this stage and die on this stage than anywhere else. Like I'm gonna I would have to lay down for a second. Like, people would think it's part of the show, but I would literally be passing out, and then I would just like. Come back and then another song.
Yeah,
you know?
Adrenaline.
So it was this. Yeah, for me that's the way it is. It's leave it all on the stage, or you know what the fuck are you doing up there?
Yeah,
you know. So yeah.
Okay, so you did Dismount, and then you and your two friends, was that your girlfriend?
She was just like a good friend that I've always had my whole life.
So your mom goes go to Austin and find an apartment.
Yeah, and
were you going to go to school? Or were you just
I thought about it, you know. I was going to go into radio, television, film.
Oh, okay,
because
cool.
I did. I had my own radio show when I was in San Saba.
Oh, so you've already done this.
I have done this. I have done this, but not. I need to get back into it. I didn't want to get back into it. But I had my own radio show. I'd broadcast church services from 7 to 7 on Sundays. But in between there, my boss gave me an hour to do my own music.
What did you play?
Oh, dude. Well, at first it was
you weren't playing like Rage Against the Machine.
Hold on, not yet. At first it was all like country music, right?
Right.
Because they would get all these CDs with all the singles being released, right?
Right.
So you'd just play, I can play anything. He'd let me choose and I'd put stuff on. But then I was finally like, man, you know, can I play my own stuff, you know? So then it became Aaron Barron's Hour of Power. So in between these church services.
Yeah.
And so, dude, yeah, I would have my buddies come on, and I had these characters, you know. I would do Benny the Hairless Chinchilla.
How does he talk?
He would just, you know, he would, like, really wouldn't even make, he really wouldn't even make words, you know. He would just be like, and then I ripped off Adam Sandler's Sanchez the Talking Goat, or his talking goat, you know, yeah. My name was Sanchez, talking goat, and Sanchez was always getting into stuff. And majority of the time, it was me in there just talking to myself and making these characters.
Right.
And I would get, I got reminded the other day, this, I remember the only calls I would get in, I would get call-ins, right. You know, and it'd be from the San Seba County Jail. Because you know what I knew one of the prisoners in there,
okay,
and he was locked up for a little bit, and he would call me and be like, "Aaron, man, Aaron's show's great. You know, can you play this song for me?" You know, because I knew I went to school with his little brother. You know, he's locked up at the time, so it would just be it was just entertaining ourselves at that point in time. You know, because nobody's hearing that shit outside of San Seba.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
so. But then, yeah, so I wanted to go on Radio Television Film, and I think, I don't know, I don't even think I filled out the paperwork right. I was just like, fuck it, I'm not meant to go to college, whatever. So that's how into it was. I was like, oh, I didn't sign the right paperwork. All right,
it's that easy.
I'm just not meant to be. It's not meant.
Yeah, I knew I was going to mess this up somehow. I'm not going to school. So you moved here with your friends? Did the three of you guys live together?
Moved here in Breakers. We're exactly where we're at right now.
My apartment.
We're in your apartment complex. And I remember the first couple of days, me and my buddy Cody didn't have a job. But the girl Brandy that was living with us, she had a great job downtown at this law firm. And so Cody and I were swimming a couple of days back here, you know, like trying to figure things out, you know, just lounging at the pool. And she'd come home and just look at us disgusted.
Yeah.
You know, like, what are y'all doing?
Yeah.
You know?
And not your mom.
Yeah. We were like, oh, great. We got to go get a job. So we went, I remember we went into like, applied at like a call center.
Oh,
you know?
God. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like, I remember being in there thinking, fuck this, dude. What? Like, I was like, I do not want to do this.
Everybody at some point, I think that doesn't have like a college education.
Yeah.
Like I dropped out of college.
Yeah.
And so there's a point where you're like, I gotta get a job. And so you're like, what am I qualified to do? And then you read a thing and this looks appealing. But when you walk into this room, I wish you could.
Yeah.
It's always in a strip mall.
Yes.
It's some funky ass place
over here
that
by the
smells
back room,
weird.
By the back room.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just white walls. And like, the guy that meets you, I've never met I only went to one thing, but it was a guy, and it was a guy that's like, selling. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
In
he's
this weird
the
mode,
yeah.
And like, yeah.
He's always the ringleader.
Did you do it? Because I left. Like, I got to the thing, I talked to the guy, and then he said, wait outside, you're going to be great. Like, he was like, oh,
I've got my star now.
Yeah.
I've got my,
you don't mind talking to people.
Yeah.
Like, oh, and I was just like,
and you don't have a
go
record?
Wait for the guy. Yeah. I wait for the guy to call me back in, and I
took
bailed.
Off. Yeah.
So did
so
you do it?
So it was a similar thing. So me and my buddy went to go get the training, and the next day we were going to have to come in. Yeah. And I remember I woke up, and Brandy called me and was like, hey, I got you an interview at the law firm. And I was like, boom, peace. Yeah. I'm not going to this freaking place. So I was like, and so I took off, and I went to this law firm, and fortunately I got the job. And I ended up, that was my only day job I've ever had in Austin. I worked there for 6 years.
Oh, wow, that's
pushing,
great.
Pushing a mail cart, delivering mail. And
through the beginning of the Ghostland stuff and everything.
Yeah, dude, they really helped me out, actually. They let me, I grew my hair long while I was there. They let me, you know, when I'd go on tour, I had paid vacation.
That's great.
So that truly helped out. And then when I didn't have paid vacation, they would fortunately help me go, and then I could always come back to my job when I got back, so... They honestly really helped me be able to financially support myself.
You probably also gave, you didn't act like a jerk off that didn't want to be there while he was there.
Oh, no,
probably.
Hell no. Dude,
you
I
just
talked
gave,
to,
gave
I talked
what
to
you had.
Everybody there.
Yeah,
like,
and did
I was,
a good job.
Oh, dude, I was like friends with everybody in that place. And it's right on 6th and Congress.
Oh, yeah.
So I was like in the epicenter, right?
Yeah.
And me being like straight from the country. You know,
yeah,
I was
so what
just,
what happened to you when you moved to the big city?
Boom! Dude, my fucking mind blew up, dude.
How old were you? Were you underage?
I was 18.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, dude. So like, I was fresh out of high school.
What were you doing at night? Like, were you going places? Were you going to
I
see
to
music?
I used to call it politicking. I would have my little black book. I didn't have a cell phone.
Okay.
And I would go to shows, and I would just watch people. I'd get in the corner. I wouldn't go with friends. I didn't have any friends, so I would just kind of, like, sit in the corner and just watch. And observe and watch people perform. And I'm like, oh, that dude's cool. I want to go introduce myself and get his number. You know, so I just started like kind of like, I'd call it politicking, you know, like started like meeting other musicians.
Yeah.
Like, and that's just slowly what I did. And, you know, I had a heavy metal band here in the beginning too. Tried doing that. It just got to one point one day where I was just like, this is not me. I need to go and explore the realms of music.
Yeah.
You know, like it was just like, I got to get out of this heavy metal state and anger state or whatever and start exploring different worlds, you know?
Yeah.
So
that's definitely like, you can tell that's a theme in your life just from the two projects.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like they're night and day.
Yeah. Exactly.
Same singer, but night and day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, I get bored with whatever and then I got to keep changing. I got to keep.
That makes the best
territory artists.
You know what I mean? Like Bowie, you know, like guys that just aren't scared to you know.
Who, you know, I idolize. You know, I idolize those artists that naturally just
they just
need to keep moving.
Yeah.
You know. And that's just what I want to do. So yeah.
So how did you meet Thomas on one of your
I met Thomas through an ad in the Chronicle.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you remember the ads in the back,
Course,
you know,
course, yeah.
Like looking shots in the dark.
Yeah.
I was actually, it's funny. So through my job, I used to have to take the mail to the post office every day at the end of the day. Uh-huh. That would take it down to the downtown post office.
Yeah.
And there's some characters down there too. So I would go wait in line and I saw this dude. They would always have these sandal boxes. He always had these tons of boxes. And he'd be in line every single day shipping all those boxes. And I'm like, who's this dude? You know, like, what is he doing? And I remember we got close enough in line and we started chatting. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm a drummer, but I own this place called Sandals and Such over here behind Katz's Deli.
Okay.
Remember back there?
Yeah, I don't remember the
place,
but I know.
There's this little store back there behind Katz's.
Okay.
And so I was like, cool, you're a drummer. I was like, well, I play guitar. You know, you want to jam? And he's like, yeah, just come over to my place and we'll just jam, you know? So him and I started jamming. This guy's name was Andrew Hamra. And him and I started jamming, and we're like, man, we need to get somebody that could kind of just, like, because he was really into, I mean, he got me turned on to, like, Radiohead and all these different, like, bands. And he was like, man, we need something like a soundscapist, somebody that can do kind of sounds around all this, you know? And we were really into Mogwai and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So
all that stuff was going on then.
It was going on then, you know? And, like, so we put an ad out, and... And, of course, we tried out a million different people. You know, even the Chronicle, you know, you always get all these characters in. So, actually, Thomas came in, and I was just like, I don't know about this electronic stuff that this guy's doing. You know, it's like dance music or whatever, you know, because I was a rocker then.
Right.
I wasn't thinking
yeah.
about dancing anymore,
right.
you know?
Yeah.
But this Andrew's like, no, he's like, I think it's cool. We should try to work with him. I was like, all right. So, it just kind of started... jamming together, and then I remember the rest of the band left. Andrew went surfing in Tequila like for 3 months, and he's like, here, y'all have my little apartment and keep practicing.
Yeah.
We're like, cool. So Thomas and I think we saw a very good work ethic in each other. We knew we were willing to give everything and every waking hour to it.
Yeah.
And when you find that person, you got to just kind of run with that.
That's so much easier than a whole band.
It is.
You know what I mean?
It is.
Like, if you can find one person... And you guys, it's cheaper to travel. Everything's just better.
Everything is, man. But we just realized quickly there was nobody else that was willing to work as hard as we were.
Right.
You know, that was trying to play in the band with us. Everybody had an excuse, or I can't stay up that late, whatever.
Right.
But we literally would get off our day jobs, 7 o'clock, get in the studio, and we'd stay up till 4 a.m. I mean, I lived off 3 hours of sleep for years, man.
Yeah.
And,
but it was worth it. You were...
Oh, we wanted to do it. Like, what the fuck else were we going to do? Sleep? Like, that's stupid. You know? And at the time, I didn't have any children yet. So, it was... I mean, I was just blowing and going, dude. You know, we were just in it. And it was years before we finally played our first show. Because we didn't know what the fuck we were doing. We didn't know what kind of sounds. We just were in there every night just...
That's unbelievable, though. I mean, you created the sound.
Yeah. By necessity.
Yeah.
Because how we ended up synthesizing and sequencing everything... was because a drummer quit on us the week before our first show.
Oh, wow.
And so we were like, how are we going to do the beats? And we were like, Thomas was like, well, I can do beats on here. And I was like, well, yeah, then we should just program the beats. Fuck it. Let's just do this. Who cares?
Yeah.
Let's just get through the show.
Yeah.
ended up doing it, and that's how we started doing the beats. It was by necessity.
How was his songwriting? Did he come up with the music and then you sang over it or something?
You know, it's always been this, we've just always gone in the room and hammered it out, you know, banged our head against the walls, you know, and like he'll start kind of playing a beat, you know, or groove, and then maybe do something. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Like, let's go with that. Okay.
Yeah.
See if you can sing something over it, you know, and I'd sing something over. Oh, should we, you know, and it would just always be just starting from, you know, sticks and stones, you know?
Yeah.
And then it just, man, I remember the first time we realized we had something because I was still trying to do a rock thing over the top of it. And I remember the first, we were playing at the Red Eye Fly, and we did this one song where I got on the mic stand and I was like grinding on the mic stand and dancing, and people were just like, what the fuck is this? Yeah. You could see the crowd change. They're just like, whoa, what is this?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, and we're like, oh. Yeah. What's happening? What are we doing? Causing an effect. Yeah, what is happening? You know? So we need to do more stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know? And so we just, it was all like scientific research, honestly. You know what I'm saying? Like it was
trial and error, too.
It's trial and error, like seeing, okay, how's it going to affect these, you know, how are these chemical reactions going to happen?
That's amazing.
And yeah, that's all how it unfolded. It was never planned. None of it was like really, like, nothing was ever strategized.
No.
That's what was amazing about the whole Ghostland experience. From start to finish, nothing was strategized.
I think you feel that. There's something organic and just kind of like, it's just kind of happening. But at the same time, there's two people that have dedicated everything to it.
Yeah.
So you don't feel the work that's gone into it. You're just having a good time with it, which is what you're supposed to
exactly. do. No, exactly. You know, so that, I mean, that's what's just still blows my mind about Ghostland. It's just like, I don't know. I mean, the only thing I know is just hard work and dumb dedication. You know, we just give everything to it. And it was, I mean, not dumb, like in a way, like it was stupid, like just didn't know no better.
Yeah.
You know, that's just what you knew. Yeah. Get in there and work your ass off and something happens.
So do you feel like you guys worked and then you just wanted to step back and, I mean, it's still going on, right? You guys are doing a show.
We're just going to be playing a Euphoria huge festival. Fest, right? Yeah. With Pretty Lights. That's going to be massive. No, Ghostland, it's crazy. Ghostland is still gaining momentum and it's not a fully, we're not doing it all the time. You know, it's still gaining fans. I mean, we get people all the time like, have you heard of Ghostland? This is amazing.
It's fucking amazing. And I mean, like, it is.
And it's awesome. Honestly.
There's a guy, I was outside and I was talking to the guy that manages here. And then he was like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm getting ready to interview someone. He's like, oh, who you got today? I was like, oh, this guy Aaron from Ghostland Observatory. He's like, oh, man, I saw those guys in, he saw you at Red Rocks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that place is awesome.
Yeah, that place is amazing.
No, yeah, I mean, yeah, all the places we've gotten to play and man, you know, we went hard, dude. I mean, we went super hard. And Thomas and I always laughed and we talked and we always pushed, we really pushed each other. And it was like, we always said, we're going to ride it till the wheels fall off, you know? And that's what we did. You know, for me, mentally, physically, I just got to a point where I had to stop because we were driving ourselves after every show. I was driving 15 hours. I would step off stage after dancing and performing all night. I would get behind the wheel, and we had two vans, and he's driving one full of gear. I'm driving the other full of lasers, you know? And
that's the best quote for this from all of my podcasts. He's driving one van full of gear. I'm driving another van full of lasers.
Yeah. So it's like, dude, we would drive 15 hours the next gig.
Yeah.
You know, we're doing it ourselves. I mean, up until the very, when I finally had to push the pause button, you know? So for me,
You guys, I mean, surely you were making enough money to have people.
We were, but it was just, that was not our style. You know what I'm saying? We were just like.
Like the DIY.
Like for punishment, you know? But we just sort of had a pride about that, you know, like, fuck it, we'd do it all ourselves, you know, screw that, you know, like, so, but in the end, you know, I mean, not the end, because it's still going, but finally, to when I had to really just step back and get myself back together again, was just, I was just, it was just unhealthy for me to not be sleeping.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sleep's an amazing thing, you know, so it started really taking me back into a dark, aggressive place again. It started kind of turning on me because I wasn't getting enough sleep, and my body was working too hard. I was not getting enough nutrition, you know, and I worked myself till I had to stop. I was mentally collapsing. you know? Yeah. And I just realized, I was like, I mean, I was going crazy.
Yeah.
You know, and not because we didn't use drugs. Like, I've never stepped on the stage with drugs or alcohol in my body.
Really?
I performed completely sober. And so it wasn't that. It was just honestly pure exhaustion that ended up catching up with me. You know, and
it wasn't like you were partying afterwards. You had to drive 15 hours.
Oh, dude, we never partied afterwards, dude. It was straight in the friggin' van, or I could stop at the hotel and sleep for an hour or two before having to get back in the thing, and that just hurt.
Yeah.
You know, so it was honestly, I couldn't physically or mentally do it anymore.
Wow.
I had to push the pause button. And, you know, I have three daughters.
I didn't know that.
You know, so it's
so
like,
when did you start having kids?
I had my first daughter right when Ghostland first started.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it was raising a child and doing Ghostland at the same time, which is
wow.
mind fuck.
I
you
bet.
Know, I mean,
how old
mind,
is she now? Like 10?
She's 11.
11.
Yeah. So talk about your brain being ripped in half of all of a sudden gaining all this popularity, all this fame, and being this big shit, you know? And then also on the other half, you have to be responsible. And purely my heart was in both places.
Yeah.
You know,
are you
because
married?
I am married. Yeah.
Same lady?
I'm with the same girl that I've known since seventh grade. You
really?
Know, so yeah,
that's awesome,
so,
man.
Small town girl, you know, grew
what
up with me.
What does she do now?
She's at home with the kids, and also she's a health coach and everything. So she does all the health and nutrition and all that amazing stuff, and helps people get their lives together. You know, so that's a wonderful woman to be married to.
Yeah,
if you're somebody like me, you know, because she's really the rock and the stable, just. You know, person.
Wow. Yeah.
So, you know, and you got to be put up with somebody like me, you know, so, but.
Yeah. And I mean that to navigate that, like I was married and on the road.
Yeah.
And I did get divorced. It's funny because people always say like, what was it? Because you were on the road all the time. I was like, no, it's because I stopped touring for a year.
Yeah. You become a beast.
I didn't. And, when nobody liked each other.
Yeah.
We realized, oh shit, I like you better like 4 months out of the year.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and the thing is fortunately with my wife and I, it's like we're opposites. She doesn't want to be in the limelight. She doesn't want to be the person that's always getting the attention.
Yeah.
So that works great in a relationship, right? Because, but she really.
For me, in my relationship, when I've dated attention people,
it doesn't work. It doesn't work, right? You need that.
It's only one rock star per household.
Exactly, right? And we need that person to be like, hey, you're being an asshole.
Yeah,
or, hey,
exactly.
You're being
exactly.
this, you know? And I love her for that because she's always been that real down to earth person being like, no, dude, you're not anything different than whatever, you know? And I've always needed that person to check me in my life, and she's been my best friend since seventh grade. So.
That is so amazing.
It's amazing.
I mean, I'm sure it's hard.
Oh, dude, we've worked for it, bro.
Yeah,
we've worked for
it. I would never think
don't,
that. Like,
don't
you
think
skated.
It's all fucking flowers and roses.
Nothing
boy.
Is.
No, hell no, dude.
Nothing is flowers and roses.
No, hell no, dude. It's been seriously hard work and dedication and sacrifice.
And three kids
and
three girls,
three daughters. Yeah, yeah. Which are amazing. I mean, because they're just.
Does it freak you out when you're seeing some of these girls at these
oh,
shows
yeah,
and they're
dude.
On
like,
drugs and they're
oh,
acting
dude,
like
it,
freaks?
It makes me sad because it does. It really makes me sad because the thing is I don't like. To me, I felt like within the rave world and the electronic world, it's become something that is something. It's become so not about the music anymore. You know, it's like I could have been up towards the end. I could have been up there with a CD playing and not even singing and just lasers and lights flashing from people's face. And these fucking kids can't even see what's going on. I'm all about taking a psychedelic trip. I'm all about taking medicine when you need it.
Yeah.
It's medicine.
Yeah.
You know, soul medicine.
Yeah.
It's for the spirit.
Yeah.
And you know, and a lot of these, and you know, that's to me, I think that's what's the problem with keeping a lot of drugs illegal. Because there's not a lot of information out there of what it's going to do to you.
And there's a lot of misinformation.
There's a lot of misinformation.
You know,
so when you're looking at 14-year-old girls topless passing out in the fucking front row with their eyes rolling back of the head, I don't want to fucking be singing to that. I don't want to be helping in enabling. I don't want to be enabling that party.
Yeah. Yeah.
What kind? You know, what am I doing as an artist to uplift somebody's spirit or help them get out and get over stuff when they're passed out and their eyes are rolling back of their head because their boyfriend gave them some junk ass shit they got off the side of the road,
right?
Or at one of these friggin' lame ass
Yeah.
You know, drug stores or bath salts or whatever the bullshit is when they can't get the real stuff anymore.
Yeah, and
you
it's
know?
One of those cultures that starts off really nice, like the hippie thing, but then it ends up like when you Gunky. Go when you go to the corner of Haight and Ashbury in 1967,
yeah.
It's a bunch of creepy, drugged out people that
exactly.
are trying to rape people.
It's all fantasized bullshit, and yeah. I think that's the thing is people love to look at the candy gloss of everything out on the outside, but when you really get into it, look at it, man, I mean, you know, it... Like I said, there's everything with moderation, everything with balance. Like I said, I am all up for a psychedelic trip when it's there and needed.
Yeah.
But when it just becomes just a part of the culture,
yeah.
and it's all the time, you're just becoming a friggin',
a druggie.
A druggie.
Yeah.
That's what you become.
Yeah.
And I saw that element happen, and it really does. My wife and I, you know, I remember going to a... We were opening up for a very big electronic artist in San Francisco.
Oh.
And we were there, and it was in this big, like, arena. And I remember we were kind of walking around the back, and we were just seeing all these little girls. And, you know, our daughter's 11. Our oldest is 11. And I was like, you better be damn about that I'm going to be standing right next to her when we're at a show like this, you know?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, just seeing these girls just passing out left and right, and I'm like, man, dude, that ain't cool. I mean, these kids can die like this, you know?
It's
like,
dangerous.
It's dangerous, you know? And there's no parents around. There's nobody, you know? Yeah. I know I sound like a parent, you know? And I'm like,
no,
man, I sound really, really, what, like, not cool, Aaron, or whatever, but it's like, fuck that, dude. Like, you're really messing with a big...
Let all those people turn 30 and then say...
Yeah, exactly.
Argue with you.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? You don't even have to be that old. Like, how old are you?
I'm 33.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's I just care about people in general.
Sure.
You know, and I care about, I want people to see new things. I want people to experience different things, of course.
Yeah.
But you're not really experiencing the show if you're not there.
Yeah.
You know, so... Yeah, that was a crazy realization for me.
Did you say to Thomas one day, like, man, this isn't as fun for me right now?
I just, yeah, I mean, you know.
He felt the same way. Did he?
I don't know if he did or not. I just know that I knew I was really just freaking out. Like, I think I was really just having a breakdown.
Yeah.
Like, mental breakdown.
It happens.
It's just a
pressure cooker, that thing.
And I'm sure he was just like, man, what's going on? You know, this guy's always really upbeat and going, you know. And I'm sure he was kind of like, what is happening? You know, but then he realized it's like, man, I'm melting. I can't do this.
Yeah.
I'm melting down, you know. Like, I can't physically do it anymore. So, you know, it was just one of those points, man. And I remember shaving my head. It was just something told me. In order to shatter the ego... In order to move on, I had to just cleanse that, you know.
Yeah,
and that was part of the cleansing process, you know.
I read an interview with Peter Gabriel where he did that, and then I didn't shave my head, but I got like an army haircut.
Yeah, yeah.
To sort of like move on to the next phase. You're done with that guy.
Exactly.
You cleanse yourself.
Exactly.
You know, it's weird, but it really does kind of work.
It does work. I mean, it really does, because you think about all that hair and all that energy that I had. I mean. I shaved my head here in this apartment's complex. This is where I first shaved my head when I was 18.
All right.
And that's when I started growing out my hair.
Wow.
And finally, when I was like, 29, maybe 30, that's when I shaved my head.
Are you Mexican, right?
Yeah. And it's
a little bit.
It's half Mexican, half German, but Native American in there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I always thought you were a Native American guy, and then like, I was reading some YouTube stuff under some comments. Is that a real Indian dude?
Isn't that a real Indian dude? Well, no, actually, the weird thing about that is that I've always grown up knowing I was Mexican and German.
Yeah.
You know? And
that's a popular Texas combo.
It is.
In fact, I have a great friend one of my best friends that I grew up with wrote an amazing novel about just that.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man, you'll have to tell me what that is.
Yeah, yeah, I'll hook you up.
I'll check it out. But... It was like, I had so many people wearing the braids. I had so many people ask me, what tribe are you from? What tribe are you from? And finally got this email from this gentleman named Red Knife.
Oh, no.
And he was like, do you know what tribe you're from?
Oh,
you know? Okay. And I was like, no. And he was like, well, we can do some studies and see, look at your family lineage and kind of trace it back through tribal records or something like that, you know, that he had, you know? And sure enough, it came back that, you know, I'm Lipan Apache.
Oh, wow.
So, which was a big group around this area.
Yeah.
You know, actually, we're San Seba, where I'm from. Lipans were everyone prevalent there, you okay know. So, yeah, so, you know, card-carrying member now, you know. Yeah. So, it's just interesting because I still do have a lot of Native American fans.
Yeah, I bet you know? You do.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's really neat. Actually, so you want to take it back to that Snoop Dogg thing. So with that show, one of the requests was, you got to bring a celebrity guest on with you for one of the rounds, because it was like round to round, right?
Right, right.
And I was like, I don't know any celebrities. You know, I don't know anybody. And so I knew Snoop was bringing Bernie Worrell and Bootsy Collins.
Right.
So I was like, fuck. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to contact these Native American tribes and see if I can't get these guys to come out in like full headdress.
And do like.
And come out and dance with like the lasers shooting over the top of them.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what I ended up doing. I ended up, you know, getting some, you know, Native American dancers, grass dancers, some from the Pawnee tribes, from Lipan Apache tribes, doing all these different fancy dancers and grass dancers, and they all came on stage, and it was awesome at that one certain part.
Wow.
And then we all got to go over there on stage and do the last song with Snoop Dogg, and I had all the dancers up there.
That's awesome.
Bootsy Collins and Bernie Wheeler were on stage, and so it was just like one of those trip things, but yeah, so that's how I roped in those.
Did you get to talk to Bootsy at all?
I did. I got to meet Bootsy, yeah.
How did that?
Well, it was cool because I didn't get to really like talk with him a long time, but I got introduced to him because one of Snoop's singers, she was like, oh, you need to check out Bootsy. You need to check out this guy. This guy, he knows how to get down, you know?
And yeah, yeah.
I was like, no. I was like, no, Bootsy, you're the man.
Yeah, I wouldn't know
you
what to say if someone was saying that to Bootsy about me.
Yeah, I was like, no, Bootsy, you're the man. And he was really nice and really kind and just a general, just nice person, you know? So that was like a starstruck moment for me, for sure.
Bet,
that whole time was a trip. I mean, Snoop, because Snoop was huge. That was the first CD I ever bought.
Yeah.
With Snoop Dogg, Dogg, Doggy
That's
style.
What I was saying. Like,
that
I'm
was
sure
my album.
90s.
Like, Lottie Dottie was like, that was my, I would jump on the trampoline singing that song all the time. I used to think if I got in a situation and a bunch of like gangster guys came up, I would just sing Lottie Dottie and they'd think I was cool.
Yeah.
That was my way.
Did you tell Snoop that?
I didn't tell Snoop that. I told his hairdresser that on a bus one night. She just started cracking up.
Did you guys tour with him?
No. But I've just, it was funny. I was in, we were in Brazil and I was standing outside this, a hotel room and in front of the hotel and I had my long hair still at the time. And this is after we did that show with Snoop, like, months after, and we were in Brazil doing a festival, and I was standing outside and just hanging out and just being like, fuck, I'm in Brazil, this is crazy.
Yeah.
And this guy came in, it's like Ghostland, and I look over, it's this big old white dude, and I'm like, yeah, what's up, you know? I didn't know who, you know, he's kind of thug looking, and I was like, what's up, you know? And he was like, dude, I'm Snoop's manager. You know, and I was like, he was like, dude, that was like Holyfield versus friggin' Tyson up in there.
Dude.
He was
awesome.
Like, he was like, that was a great show. Snoop loved that show. You know, and he was just going off about how just everybody got so hyped up about it, you know. So that was just a cool kind of like.
Snoop found a worthy competitor.
Yeah, exactly. That's cool. Exactly, yeah. Man. So it was just this cool, like, all these kind of cool things rattled off of that whole thing, you know. So it was great.
So did you guys tour everywhere, like all over the world? You do your
Europe? We would do crazy stuff, dude. Like, we never really did proper like overseas touring, but we would do like one offs. Like, I remember the craziest thing we ever did was we flew to Japan, played two shows in one day in Tokyo, and turned around and flew right back.
Why did you fly? Because your wife and stuff? Like,
no, I don't know.
Like, hey, I got to come home. I
got
kids.
I don't know, dude. I have
you
no
went
idea.
All the way to Japan. You didn't even like.
I didn't even
take
question
a day
it.
And
we no no
go look at Japan.
No, like we.
And you're a workaholic,
dude. It was like literally, we flew into Japan, freaking played that two shows in one day, and then flew back.
What was the festival you were playing in Brazil? Was that one of those like ones where 500,000 people?
Yeah,
go to?
That
really?
Was like in Sao Paulo. Yeah. That was in Sao Paulo, Brazil. And that was a one-off. You know, that was fly in, fly out.
Who else was on that bill? Snoop?
Snoop.
I mean, it must have been like
it was huge.
Pink
Black Eyed
like
Peas
that.
And all them. Yeah, it was just massive. And that was a funny tour too, because we got off the bus and we flew over there with the Black Eyed Peas, right? We were on the same plane. Right, we weren't like hanging out with them or anything, right? And we get off the plane and I hear the Black Eyed Peas are all standing over here, right? And waiting for their luggage as well. Yeah. And I hear somebody from their camp go, "Oh, dang, Ghostland Observatory." And I'm like, turning like, fucking, who's from the Black Eyed Peas that are recognizing us? And it was their DJ. Their DJ was like awesome. A huge Ghostland fan. And they're all looking at their DJ like, "Who the fuck is that? Yeah. What are you talking about?" You know? And I was like, "Oh, that's cool," you know, like that kind of thing. So just all this stuff has been, honestly, man, I've just been kind of like just amazed by it all. It's not like, yeah, it's what it's supposed to be. You know, it's like I'm always like, what is going on? Like, what is happening?
Well,
because
it's funny because you haven't bought into
it. How did I get here?
Yeah, exactly. That's how when you start asking yourself this question. You know, I woke up in the middle of the night and couldn't go to sleep, and that thing you do was on.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, when he's standing on stage and they're about to be on TV, he turns to the drummer and he's like, "How did we get here?" And I was like, "Yeah, exactly.
That's it, dude.
You're always asking yourself that stuff."
That is, man. I mean, it's a strange experience once you follow your heart and really go do what you want to do with your life.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah,
you always end up in the craziest situations.
Yeah, and you
but
let
it's cool.
yourself.
That's what you
yeah,
want.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah,
what you
just
want,
leave
right?
yourself open to it, and you just yeah,
just
sure,
go with it. Austin really taught me that, I feel like.
Austin's like that.
I feel like moving here and like the people I hung out with when I first moved here really showed me that.
Yeah.
In my life, you know, just like, just go with it.
Yeah.
Just, it's here. Just go for the experience. You
so,
know?
Man, I have a question and I like music.
Yes.
So I love Ghostland Observatory. I love Midnight Stroll. It's all great. You're an amazing artist. What happened when you put out Midnight Stroll? Like, did you have to find a new audience?
Oh, man.
Or did some of those people come with you? Or did some people, like, I'm sure when you, I saw you did a tour in the fall.
Yeah, did a 3-month tour, dude.
And yeah, and I'm sure it's like, oh, the dude from Ghostland Observatory. And people are like, oh, yeah, dude, make sure you get the Molly. Let's go to the show.
Yeah, yeah.
And they get there and they're like, wait a minute, it's a band.
Dude, honestly, it was like, I don't think really anybody really, I don't think enough people know yet. Like, I don't think really. It's interesting because when I went on the tour, like, dude, I would play to like Missoula, Montana, 6 people.
Yeah.
You know, Denver was like 400 people.
Yeah.
So it's like, it was almost like really cool because you kind of went out there and saw, okay, these places know.
Yeah.
But some of these other ones don't. Still kind of weird. You know, I didn't know what to expect, you know, and I still don't know if people really know or if they're just not that interested in following me beyond Ghostland. You know, it's kind of at one of those points where it's like,
well, it's interesting that you're at least cognizant of it and you don't have like some attitude like Prince where you're like, oh, the entire world has decided to turn against me.
Yeah.
Someone in power is mad at me. And now like, you're like, you know what? Sometimes this stuff is because, I mean, you took an artistic chance.
Oh, yeah. You got to, man. I'm not going
to. Well, of course you got
sit there and keep.
Of course you got to. Guys like you or me have to because we want to be ultimately happy making the music. But like. A person who was thinking business-wise less than artistically would not have made the move that you made because they're like, oh, business is going good for Ghostland. You know, maybe we just need to take a break. And maybe if I do a solo thing, it's gonna have like a pumping beat and not, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
I think...
I mean, it's the same voice.
It's the same voice. And honestly,
melodic...
Yeah.
Ideas.
And honestly, like my new demos that I'm doing for the Midnight Stroll right now, I am naturally starting to do stuff that's more upbeat,
dancing.
Yeah. And it's not dancey. It's more it's in the punk rock ethos,
right?
More or less. And but to me, it's like, yeah, I really didn't know what to expect, and I've never made anything off of business decisions.
No, you're following your heart.
Following my heart, yeah. Always, because it's something that's never led me astray.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? There's been plenty of business people that lead you astray,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But if you follow your heart, yeah, you might get in some weird positions. Yeah, you might get kind of nervous every now and then. But in that part of the ride, you know, I mean, sure, there's fucking days I'm freaking out. You know, I'm like, well, I got three kids. You know, I've got a wife. And I've, throughout my whole life, I've always done that. But then something always comes and tells me, it's like, just keep your head down and keep working.
Yeah.
Keep writing. Show up every day and write from 9 to 5. Treat that like your job.
Is that what you do?
That's what I do. I show up every day. And some days I come up with little scratches. I come up with something. Oh,
yeah.
And then years later, I'm like, oh, remember that idea? Oh, that's why I did that.
Yeah.
Oh, it came back to me. You know, and it's just like showing up every day and just writing, just somehow, some form of art. And it always just seems to just work itself out if I just keep showing up and working, you know? Yeah. And, but it's also because I love to do it. Like,
yeah,
I
of course.
If I don't do something artistic every day, like work on music or something, I'm a pissy little bitch.
Yep, me too.
You know, I'm like, yeah, me too. My wife is like, fuck, like go write a song, please, because you're getting on my fucking nerves, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, I have to do it.
Yeah.
And I don't think I could ever go back to working for somebody.
Yeah.
I just can't. It's just like, I've found this is what I want to do, and I'm going to do it every day of my life until whenever.
Yeah.
You know? I don't ever think about, I'm bank $1 million and retire.
Right.
How can you retire from
feeling? There's no retiring, yeah.
How can you retire from feeling?
Yeah.
When you do, that's when you die.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't happen.
Yeah,
why would
you? Yeah.
You know, I'm not in it to cash out. I'm in it to create. I'm in it to blow minds. I'm not in it to fit in. I'm in it to be the leader of the fucking pack.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I come to do. Uh-huh. You know, I'm not here to fucking play somebody's game and try to follow some Taylor Swift, Bruno Mars bullshit. Like, I'm here to fucking do my own thing.
Yeah.
You know, follow me through the woods if you want.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally.
So, that's just my thing, you know? So, I don't know, whatever that's worth.
Yeah. I think it's worth a lot, man. I'm really glad that we finally got to meet.
Yeah, dude.
And talk. I wish that, like, now I'm just like, oh, I'm going to go visit you in Leander.
Yeah, come up, dude.
What do you guys do? Yeah. What's it called? Skeleton?
The Skeleton Farm.
Skeleton Farm.
Yeah.
And Jonas is working out there?
Dude, yeah. Mr. Jonas.
Is he living out there too in Leander?
No, he's living here in Austin.
Okay.
Yeah, but he drives up every day and comes out there and does his work out there, man, you know? You know, he's working on multiple projects out there, and then, of course, I'll roll in, hey, check out this tune. What can we do with it? You know, he's like, oh, you know, Jonas, he's like a friggin' great person to throw stuff at.
Oh, yeah.
He just can take it anywhere.
Such a great collaborator.
Great collaborator, good person, just one of those curious people.
Yeah.
One of those people that, oh, if I don't know it, I'm going to learn it.
Yeah.
And that's an amazing gift.
And he's not a guy that like, oh, I can't do that.
No, he's like, I'm going to figure out how to do that.
He's always like,
yeah,
I've always liked that about him.
That's what's amazing. And so he's pretty much out there, and we've been getting bands. I think this weekend we've got the Blind Pets coming out there to record. And
do you produce other bands?
I've never done that. I've never been much of a studio rat. You know, I've always
That's his world.
That's his world. And it's like, I've been sitting in and slowly learning things. I'm kind of just the student.
Yeah.
Out there, you know, I'm kind of like looking, and he'll show me stuff because he's such a teacher.
Yeah.
And that's what I found myself too, is needing to be around a teacher. I needed to learn some more.
Yeah.
You know,
he's been, man, he always, like, I think I met him when he was like, well, I met him when he was young, like 14 or something.
Well, he was touring with Johnny Lang when he was 13.
Yeah.
The world. He was one of the top blues.
I just remember his dad bringing him to like,
to the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's always telling me, he's like, yeah, I learned a lot on the road with Johnny.
Yeah, I bet he did. Oh, with me?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. What did he learn?
Well, he's just going out there.
He came in at such a bad time.
Well, you know.
Like, it was one of those drives back from New Orleans where I was like, hey, let's break up the band. And he had just gotten in and he was like, what?
Yeah, well, I thought this was my gig. No, but he's like, so I've got him out there, man, and it's just been like, it's been super cool because my whole thing when I was starting to get my mojo back and getting back into making music again after I'd put the pause button on Ghostland, I really mentally, meditatively wanted to reconnect with Austin again, reconnect with all the friends I hadn't seen in a long time, reconnect with the scene. And that's kind of what has helped with Jonas, because he is in the scene, you know. Yeah. And he's really just he's a really super nice guy that a lot of musicians respect.
Oh yeah.
And you know, it's so there's a lot of great bands coming out there to record now. So, and they're really enjoying the space. We're getting some great sounds out of there. You know, we don't get, I mean, and the thing
is it like connected to your house or something?
No. It's a completely separate building from the house. So, everybody, it's on like 5 or 6 acres out there. So it's kind of like just a space for people to feel like comfortable to kind of just, you know, we don't have any Wi-Fi in the room or anything. So yeah, it's like a real disconnection.
Yeah.
You know, people can really just get out there and work.
Yeah.
And that's why I enjoy it. That's why I enjoy being out in the country, because I can work.
Yeah.
You know, I need to be able to work. I need to be able to do my thing. I am a bit of a workaholic.
Yeah.
So
that's good though.
Yeah. At least I'm a workaholic at what I love doing.
Yeah.
But, I've found that the bands are really, and it's just getting going, honestly, but it's moving. Like people are like, oh, what's going on out there?
That's great.
I want to come out there. And I'm like, yeah, come on, dude. Like, and to me, honestly, sharing that kind of space with other people, because it's not a commercial space. We're not advertising for it.
No.
But sharing that kind, to me, is kind of like creating the mind resin in the church.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
We're getting...
The mojo's there.
The mojo. And we're donating more mojo.
Yeah.
You know, to it, you know? So we're creating more mind resin to be flowing around that space. So in order, it might ping off of some kind of cosmic thing in another artist that comes in the room, you know? So that's kind of what I see from it. It's beneficial and to me and to whoever's coming there. So,
right.
So it's creating a temple.
You're working on new tunes for the Midnight Stroll?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. We've got some really cool stuff coming. So
what are you looking to do like this year? What does 2015 look like for you?
I really don't know. You know, I think I'm just getting back into my DIY thing again. You know, like just...
There's just something fun about that, isn't it?
Oh, man. It's just, I don't know.
I miss like going to Kinko's and making flyers. Yeah. Like all that stuff was just awesome.
No, I know, man. And it's like, to me, it's like, it is, because there's a lot more creative thing that happens in that way.
Yeah.
And it's a little dirty and it's a little raw and it's a little not all put together, but, but who is,
what
you know,
is?
What is, and when it is, then it becomes so glossy, like a Subway cup, you know?
Yeah, I don't think I would really want to. I feel sometimes like when I watch the Grammys that there's a majority of the people that are in that thing do something completely different than I do for a living.
Yeah. It's a different world, man. It's a different beast.
Yeah, it's like they're in a different game.
They're in a different game. It is, man, because that's the game of having financiers really...
Handlers.
All that come stuff. On with your mink and your cage.
Yeah.
You know, like it is a different world and I just can't bring myself to be that person.
No.
You know, to me, I need something pure
and real.
raw and real. Because I think that's what's missing more in the world than anything, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there is raw and real, but it's all through filters.
Yeah.
And to me, there's something so pleasurable about something that's not planned, that is just off the cuff, that happens when you're just really just...
Yeah.
You know, into a show with people right there in your face. There's no security guard in between you. There's no, you know, there's no distance between you and the crowd. It's danger. It's the element of you know, fire, you know. It's like, so I have to have that.
Yeah.
You know, in order to get off, you know.
Yeah.
You got to have that. So it's interesting.
Are you and Thomas planning on making any new music at all?
I hope so. You know, I, you know, we haven't really discussed it beyond.
What do you do, like, when you're going to go do this show? Like, you guys get to get together and rehearse
for a while? Yeah, we get, like, a rehearsal space, and we get the whole full production back going, you know, get the lasers up, get everything rolling, you know?
So their lasers are yours?
No, they're not ours. Oh. No, those things are crazy, dude.
Yeah.
Those things are, I can't believe they let us roll around the U.S. with those things. Those things are crazy. I mean, they're legit, you know?
Yeah.
Things like burn a hole through a wall, dude. You know, I mean, like, you know, I mean, that shit is dangerous.
You ever blind yourself or anything like
that? I didn't actually. My front of house guy, if you ever listen to this, Alex Brown, love you. But he actually got a spot in his eye because he bent down and the laser cut on like lightning quick, like boom. It took a second.
Like laser quick,
dude. And it went, and I remember him saying, he's like, dude, I got hit in the eye, but he's like, ah, you know, it's probably go away type thing. But yeah, no permanent spot in his eye.
Oh, shit. From it.
Yeah, dude. But fortunately, I've been hit, but I was always wearing sunglasses, so there's some bit of filter, but I always move real quick, you know, from it.
Right.
And I always kind of knew to when I was dancing in them to, you know, and I could feel heat, dude. Sometimes I'd be on stage, and I would smell. I was like, what is that smell? That's my fucking shirt burning.
Shit.
You know, sometimes on a test pattern.
Yeah.
Not on the stuff that goes on during the shows.
Right.
But when they're doing test patterns, when they need to see where it's at.
Yeah.
You know, if you're too close to that thing, it'll light you on fire, dude. You know, and I'm probably going to grow like a third arm or
right,
fifth
maybe at
arm
some
on my
point
back,
because of all your exposure,
you know,
yeah, to the gamma rays or whatever it is.
Radiation, yeah. Radiation, you know, yeah. You know. So, yeah, who knows, dude?
It's the difference, though, between, because I haven't seen you guys live, but I watched some video on YouTube. I mean, it's a completely different presentation. I mean, you're still an incredible performer.
Yeah.
But now it's like a band, and
it grew into just something crazy. And you know, you want to talk about not planned. I mean, the whole way Ghostland got those lasers, the funniest story about it is we were supposed to be doing a big show at the Hog Auditorium.
Uh-huh.
It's like when we, because Ghostland, we always kind of try to better ourselves every time. Like,
yeah,
every show, we're like, bigger, let's do
yeah.
bigger show,
yeah,
bigger
yeah,
show,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And Hog Auditorium was our, okay, before ACL, we were going to step up and really do the show. And we had this LED wall that we were going to have. And something happened with the LED wall. The guy didn't end up coming through with it. So it was literally a week before. And Thomas Googled laser light show. And the first company that popped up was this company called Lightwave International out of Pittsburgh.
Uh-huh.
And we called them. And just so happened that they were demoing the lasers for Roger Waters in Dallas that weekend. So they were like, sure, we'll just come down and basically throw you a bone and do this gig for you.
Right.
We were a baby band.
Right.
Nothing to Roger Waters' Madonna status, you
right,
know,
right.
that they were already doing.
Right.
And the owner, George, ended up just loving us so much that he was just like, dude, yeah. You know, so he did our lasers for us, and from there, that was how we got lasers. We didn't plan
That's
it
amazing.
Out. It wasn't like a, like, you know, like a designer choice.
Yeah.
You know, it was like... Google lasers.
Yeah. That's how you do it, man.
That's how you do
Sometimes
it.
That's all it takes. So when is that Euphoria Fest? In like April?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And do you have any Midnight Stroll shows coming up anytime soon?
I don't. I know we have like, I'm going to have a meeting about possibly doing a South By show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering if you were going to do... I actually have that written down, SXSW, with a question mark.
Yeah, I'm trying to get it to where the studio, Skeleton Farm, we're going to present this. We're taking over space.
Oh, do a showcase.
And I'm just going to do
oh,
a
cool.
showcase of different bands for the whole day, but it's going to be a party. It's going to be like a free party.
Awesome. Will you keep
so,
me in the loop on that?
I will,
I'll go
dude.
To that.
No, for sure. Yeah. I will. And so I haven't figured out how I'm going to get it and announce it and all that, but I'm trying to find where we can do it at right now.
Yeah.
But I just want to get just a bunch of badass Austin bands on the bill.
Yeah.
And throw a party and we'll play. And then I know we're doing a festival in Dallas in like March or something like that. But right now I'm just really focused with Midnight Stroll. I'm just wanting to write a whole new batch of tunes.
Yeah.
Like that's my thing. I'm just, and I don't know, man. I mean, I'm even planning on possibly just kind of just releasing stuff on a whim. Like,
yeah.
don't even get in the whole, like, oh, you can't release it in this quarter because,
right.
you know, nobody works
yeah,
in
yeah,
this
yeah,
quarter.
Yeah, yeah,
I'm
yeah.
like, dude, yeah. the music world doesn't, the fans
don't
give a shit about
yeah.
quarters.
No.
They don't give a shit about when the time, no, it's when the mood strikes them.
Yeah.
It's about the mood. It's not about when is it proper to,
yeah.
The world doesn't
and
exist
And you put that
like
record
that.
Out yourself?
I did. I put the record out, but then also I did it with that EP. I did a deal with Bismo
right.
Records with
yeah,
Ray
yeah,
Benson,
yeah, yeah.
and we worked that out together and co-put out that album, that EP. But to me, it's just like you know, that was great, and that really helped out. You know, that was huge that they came on board because that really helped me kind of get the word out more
yeah.
on a bigger spectrum than what I could have by myself.
Yeah.
You know. So
they have an infrastructure for that already set in place.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
So it was kind of nice. Yeah. It was, you know, and they are super cool people. And
there is a certain level that you should, I mean, you know, I respect, oh, I'm DIY and I want to just put stuff out. But like you had a certain level of success where you kind of should go from there.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly. No, totally. But also the other thing that I'm seeing too is and this is it's just going back to my ethos of where I'm from and what I've done. It's like nowadays you really can just connect directly with your fans, you know, and this is the thing that's reiterated and said over and over and over again. And I just want to get back to that. I'll put stuff out and surprise you with it and make it available.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't know how that'll work, but it's one of those things where your heart's telling you.
Yeah.
It's the way to go.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And like I said, it might be the stupidest decision in the world, but yet I will see something from that path, you know? So who knows?
Yeah. It just does, it just kind of seems, I know this is a tired way to describe it, but it's like the Wild West. Like there's no
true path.
No, it's all just crazy.
It is crazy, dude. And you just have to take your best gun and go shoot with it. You know, it's like.
And what it all boils down to is having good songs and being fucking great at your shows. And that's something that you've got.
Well,
so.
And I feel that way. And I feel like, you know, it comes down, like you said, writing good songs, performance, and hard work.
Yeah.
You know, people want to know the secret. What? That's to some people, that's the unfortunate secret.
Yeah.
Because they're not willing to put the work in for it. They just want to turn the key and get instantly huge.
Yeah.
But just as fast as you rise, as quicker you fall.
I'm still battling quitting smoking, but my grandfather, he passed away last year, but he was a doctor. And one day I was like, yeah, it's got to be a way to quit smoking where you don't feel it.
Yeah.
Like, so is there some kind of secret to quitting smoking? And he goes, yeah, you don't smoke.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you just do it. Like, I'm sorry, but I'm sure you could get famous if you went on a singing show or something like that, but that's not necessarily
it's not the best.
You're going to still have to do the work.
You are.
To get where you are.
It's
you know
funny.
What I
my
mean?
Daughters will tell me, they're like, Daddy, you know, you think
you should go on.
Yeah, you should go on, you know, American Idol or something. You think you would. And I'm like, honey, I probably wouldn't make it. You know, I probably would not. They would probably not.
I bet you would.
I mean, but in the sense of my voice is not what they might be looking for. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm like, baby, there's a machine that's built out there that wants package artists.
Sure.
They want you to come package, and they want to see how they can package you and put you out.
Yeah. I mean, you look at all the artists in history. I mean, imagine Iggy Pop auditioning or
that's what I'm
Lou
saying.
Reed auditioning
and that's,
or Bowie auditioning.
That's Iggy is
weird.
Somebody who I really admire about that shit, you know. Like, they wouldn't have done it.
Most people I know would fail those auditions.
Exactly.
Most people that I love.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, imagine Elliott Smith in one of those auditions.
No, yeah.
They would have just laughed at him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and don't get me wrong, I watch those shows just because I'm always like, ugh.
Yeah.
It fascinates me.
Sure.
I've been a Star Search kid since I was little.
Sure.
You know, watching all that, like, oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I can't help it. I can't help but not turn away from that. But I think
I was in a band that auditioned for Star Search in the 80s.
Were you?
Yeah.
What was that band called?
It was called Cry Wolf. It was with Mark Hallman, the producer that owns the Congress House.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was his band. I was a kid. I was like 16, and he was a grown-up dude. He was like your age.
And he's like, hey.
Well, he got me in his band. But yeah, I remember Star Search came. And I think we auditioned at a showcase with a bunch of different people. And
was Ed McMahon there?
No. It's just whatever, like, associate producers come and, like, scout. But, you know, Eliza Gilkison?
Yeah.
She won.
Did she?
Her band was called Eliza, I think, at the time. Yeah, yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That is amazing,
Yeah,
dude.
It's weird.
That is crazy. And I mean, and that is an avenue, right? Like we said, it's the wild.
But you still have to do
west.
The work. Like Kelly Clarkson still had to figure out how to write songs.
And she's
and
a great
be a great
singer.
She's a great singer.
There's nothing taken away from these people.
No.
It's just a matter of what path are you willing to take.
No, but
and
whoever,
what are you willing to give?
Who's the folky guy that won recently? I read just yesterday online that he's suing to get, because once it's also once you get in that thing, dude, like, Kelly Clarkson basically gave up a significant amount because my best friend for, you know, A&R Peterson, he was in Gowdy when Jonas was in. He was a bass player, bald dude, but he plays with Kelly Clarkson.
Okay,
too. And I mean, like her thing to get out of the American Idol,
she had to
basically, she's like half as rich and will be half as rich.
But she's probably 100% more happier.
Yes, 100% happier.
And isn't that the balance, man?
That's what it's. That's what it's all about.
That's what I've seen more than anything. You know, it's like, yeah, I could keep going in a direction and just kind of like, I'm just making money.
You can milk.
I'm in it to make money.
You can milk something as far as it can go. Yeah, but it's sometimes you just got to let it go and go into something else and be happy.
Because at the end of the day, yes, money does help, and yes, it does make things easier. Yes, it does help a lot of things. But also that, I mean, there's a song that I wrote with Ghostland called Rich Man, and in there there's a term, it's like, you know, I don't need all that. It's going to burn up in a fire anyway.
Yeah.
You know, that's about money. You know, that I've said that since the fucking beginning.
Yeah.
You know, and believe me, I didn't come from money. I have no problem living back in a trailer house.
Yeah.
And still making music, because making music is what makes me happy.
Yeah.
You know, and taking care of my family, that does help on the financial sense of that side too, you know.
But you'll find a way to do that.
Yeah, that's there. You will. You know, but the thing is, you know, I don't think you and I ever went into this thinking, hey, I want to make $1 million. Like I said earlier.
There have been times where I've been like, I wish I had a pool. I wish I had a bigger place.
Yeah. Well, I wish. Yeah. And
but
boy,
not like
my buddy said the other day, if wishes were like dishes, I'd have a sink full. Goes out to you, Mr. Paul Reese, if you're listening.
Do your girls like your jams?
Oh, they do. Yeah. It's funny because they dig the Midnight Stroll, but when I play Ghostland, they're like, oh, Dad.
Yeah.
This Ghostland's good, you know? Yeah. I'm like, yeah, it is. I mean, it's awesome. I love everything I've done artistically, you know? And with Ghostland, it's like, dude, I love Ghostland.
Yeah, I do too. Well, and it would be weird if you didn't.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah.
But it's funny. They dig Ghostland. They're like, because they love it. They're all in dance.
Yeah.
You know, they're dancers. So, They get on and move to it, you know, and everything. So it's cool.
Do you do any of any, like, I guess you don't coach anything for girls, do you?
Unless no, I mean,
do you do
coach T-ball?
Oh yeah,
you know, for my middle one, Melanie. But now I've thrown around the idea of being some sort of, you know, performance coach.
Yeah,
you know. But what do you get at that point, you know? I mean, it's like, I could give people advice, but it's like, at the same time, no, you gotta dig, and you gotta pose in this position, and when the light hits you, you know, there are secrets to the stage, you know, that I could share. But, I mean, honestly, between my girls and really being there for my family and music, that's just filled up my life, you know? It's just like, that's just what I do.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of trim the fat.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You seem like there's a lot of levity to you. I mean, there's a lot of lightness and a lot of happiness. Your eyes are bright and shiny.
I'm working out a lot more now.
Yeah.
And I realized that actually working out, boy, it goes a long way.
And you're
taking
this Rockin' Wellness?
Yes.
Total Body Nutrition Shake. Thank you. This is, not many people bring gifts.
No,
you brought
man.
A great gift.
And this is, it's because I've, like I said, you know, all those years of Ghostland and me not getting a lot of sleep.
Yeah.
This is what kept me getting on the stage every night.
Yeah.
It really did.
Yeah.
Like, and it's an awesome, awesome product. I mean, it's super, it's just nothing but superfoods and great, super healthy stuff for you.
Yeah. I'm going to put it in a.
Do it with almond milk, frozen banana.
Okay.
Scoop of coconut oil with that.
Yeah.
A scoop of that. Dude. You'd be solid.
You'd be ready for the
solid,
day.
Solid, dude. Solid.
Is there anything I'm missing? Dude, this has been great.
I'll come back anytime you want to have me.
Yeah, no. I'm going to have you back. We're going to do this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like talking to you a lot.
Yeah, dude. No.
You're a good, solid person. I love the music that you make. I'm so, you fill all the qualifications for a friend.
Thank you.
Like, it's hard to be friends with people that make really bad music. Just because it gets a little exhausting, and then you have to defend them to your other friends.
It
and
sounds
stuff.
Like an album title or something. I have no friends. I
have any friends.
All my friends make good music.
So far, I mean, I have a couple friends that aren't so great, but
you just let them think.
But they're funny.
Yeah, that's the number one thing I got told when I was little by this bigger guy. He was like,
"You're funny."
He's like, "Boy, you better be fucking lucky you're funny."
Yeah,
because you get your ass kicked every day.
Yeah, that's. I think that's one of the things that makes people funny. It really is
survival.
You know, like you go see the funniest comedians that you know and sit down and ask them if they used to, they'll be like, dude, I used to get my ass kicked and this is how I got out of it.
That's how you get out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to make the big kids laugh.
Yeah. So people can go to themidnightstroll.com. Your stuff is on iTunes. It's on Spotify. So is all the Ghostland stuff. I look forward to seeing what you do. People can keep up with you there. You do Instagram. You also have Twitter.
Yes. So just follow
Aaron Behrens.
Just look up Aaron Behrens, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all the good stuff. I'm there.
Thank you so much for coming by.
Yeah, man. Thank you for having
me, we'll talk
brother.
Again soon.
Definitely, man.
You're just a dreamer. You're just a dreamer. You're just a dreamer. You're just a dreamer. Are you way? Are you there?
Yeah. Aaron Behrens, man. Get out there. Check it out. Aaron Behrens and the Midnight Stroll, man. It's fantastic music, man. I'm really glad that we got to meet. I'm glad that we got to sit down and chat, get to know each other a little bit. And I'm looking forward to hanging out with him some more, man. We made some plans to do some stuff sometime. So we're going to do that stuff, all right? Aaron Behrens, I love Ghostland Observatory, and I love Aaron Behrens and the Midnight Stroll. So get out there, and if you don't know Aaron, get check out his music and see what you find out for yourself, because he's great. Great singer, great songwriter, great performer. Great musician. All right. Hey, don't forget when you're out there checking out Aaron Behrens, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes if you want. How Did I Get Here? You will get a new episode every Tuesday and every Friday. And you can like our Facebook page, see pictures of people like Aaron Behrens and me, you know, hanging out, take a picture. All right. And also, you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter. I'm at Johnny Gowdy. All right. Thank you so much for listening. Here's some more Aaron Behrens and the Midnight Stroll. Let's get down.